Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hello?
Dude, you're here.
Dude, I'm back.
You are back, dude. It is good to see you, to be sitting across the very expensive Dudes on Hockey table.
Yes.
Staring you in the eye and saying, welcome back, dude. Go Sharks.
Go Sharks.
Great win tonight against Chicago. Maybe not the best effort we've seen all season.
Maybe not.
But a win is a win, baby. And it's good to celebrate your return with a win over the hated Blackhawks and my personal nemesis, Patrick Kane.
That's right. That's right. I think it was you throwing dimes onto the ice. I saw that.
I will throw anything at that turd. I can't stand that guy. When he took a penalty, I enjoyed it so much. Maybe too much.
Yeah.
Dude, quickly, before we get into hockey, dude, how was your trip? Give the listeners maybe a highlight, like something that we could take away, some sort of fun food story or travel story or something. Keep it clean, though, you know, because I know maybe there might be a story that involves, you know, something that's not for family viewing or listening to.
It's true, dude. I don't have any great funny stories. I was mostly working. I was there for work, so I didn't do anything too awesome. You know, the food is obviously, you know, interesting. There's two kinds of food in India, veg and non-veg. So, you know, half the food is vegetarian and half isn't. And I found out early on that, you know, when you have non-veg, like, for instance, if you get chicken, you'll get like a tiny piece of chicken that for us would be a chicken nugget. But the way they prepare it and serve it is they just basically just chop the chicken up. So like the first day I was there, I'm like, oh, cool, piece of chicken. And I put it in my mouth. It's like, I'm like chewing on bones and stuff. I'm like, oh, whoa, I didn't expect that. So basically my strategy was to stay away from meat. So I ate vegetarian most of the time I was there. And then one of the last days I was there, we all went out to lunch as a group. And we went to this place where there's sort of like a barbecue thing, almost like a Benihana type situation.
Outstanding.
Except they don't actually cook it for you. They put this sort of grill on and you get these skewers of meat. And I'm like, oh, look, this actually finally looks like a meat situation where there isn't going to be like hidden secret bones that I'm going to like chip a tooth on or like get caught in my throat. So I was really stoked. So they served all these skewers of things, and this is what this restaurant was known for, which actually had the word grills in it with a Z.
With a Z?
Yeah, which I thought was really funny, you know, because obviously, you know, I was thinking of Lil Jon the whole time I was there.
Okay!
You know, that kind of thing. And so I'm sitting there eating all of these skewers, and, you know, one thing about India is everybody eats a lot, especially at lunch, and they love buffets. So I was sitting there and I'm eating all this chicken and stuff, and you know they had vegetarian like vegetables and stuff. So I was eating all this stuff and I'm looking around and nobody else in the group is eating it, and I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Uh-oh.
And so I'm getting
that's
kind
not
of
a good sign.
I'm getting kind of full, and I'm like, okay, you know, that's a pretty good lunch. I'm ready to go. And then everybody stands up. They're like, you ready for the main course now? And I'm like, oh.
Dude.
So there was a secret hidden buffet there that I didn't know about. So everybody went up and had a buffet after that. Because, as I said before, the Indians love the buffet, so it was good. I managed to eat a little bit more, but I was I looked like the idiot American there for a second.
And no one stopped you.
How was I to know? That was supposedly what the restaurant was known for, but yet it was only the appetizer.
I mean, it's called grills.
Yeah, grills.
You'd expect to be grilling your own stuff.
What?
Well, dude, it's good to have you back, and it feels like forever since we've done the podcast in person.
Yeah.
I think we did a decent job. You should have seen me trying to render the audio files and post them to the internet.
Right.
That's not really my forte.
Yes,
but
dude.
I somehow made it happen after lots of coffee and swearing at my cat. I was able to do it, dude.
And I had to rescue you once.
You did once. But we were able to get the files up there and get the podcast internationally broadcast. But let's get cooking at the matters at hand, dude. The Sharks coming off a road trip, Dallas, Colorado, tonight's games, coming back and seeing those games in person here on U.S. soil.
Yes, it's been great.
What's your take on the Sharks, who are now, based on win percentage, the best team in the NHL?
It's great to see, especially after tonight, the fact that I would certainly not hesitate in saying this is a game they didn't deserve to win. One player really sort of stole the show, obviously Antti Niemi being that player.
So tonight's a goalie steal. Your favorite stat.
But almost, but yet no.
Why?
Because the...
Wait, dude, why?
The definition of a goalie steal is 2 goals or less and 35 or more saves. And Niemi gets credited with a shutout because he allowed 0 goals, but he doesn't get a goalie steal because he only made 34 saves.
Dude, you're the goalie Grinch.
Yeah.
You are the goalie Grinch.
You have to draw
you're
a line.
You're the save Scrooge, dude.
Dude, I'm sorry.
I can't believe you're going to deny Niemi the goalie steal after his outstanding performance tonight. He was like the David Copperfield of goalies tonight.
Yeah.
He made some outstanding saves, dude. And you're not going to give him the goalie steal?
Dude, unfortunately, the goalie steal is a yes or no answer. I don't have any leeway here. It's just that's what it is.
Didn't you create this stat?
Maybe I did, but yet.
Can't you bend the rules, dude?
Well, then I'm going to have to go back and recalculate all those other posts I made on goalie steals. I'm not going to do that.
So it's 35 American shots on goal, but how many Indian shots on goal would that be?
Well, given the exchange rate, that would be roughly 2,000 shots.
So it's definitely not a goalie steal then in either country. Okay, dude, fine. But Niemi has a great game tonight. Kind of bails out the Sharks' bacon before right. Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Everyone on the team owes him a, I don't know, what's he going to have tomorrow? Lutefisk.
Yeah. And Dan Boyle owes him two.
Oh, Dan Boyle. Not his worst game as a Shark. I think we all remember what his worst game was when he put the puck in his own net.
That was still not, I was off a stick.
Yeah, but he directed it back in that direction.
And it was playoffs overtime.
I think that would be the worst game in his Sharks' career. But this has got to be number two, right?
Yeah, this is pretty close.
Three penalties. I was convinced that he was going to end up scoring the game winner just because that's, you know, the kind of competitor that Dan Boyle is. But it's going to happen every now and then, right? You're going to lay a stinker.
Yeah, he fell down a couple times.
But
gave
the pairing,
breakaways.
The pairing of Burns and Vlasic really picked up a slack tonight, I thought.
Yeah.
By far, this is Mark Edward Vlasic's best career season, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has evolved finally into that shutdown defenseman who now is showing a little bit of flair for the offensive. Yeah. I don't think that's going to keep up, but even if he can get to 20 points, that's a bonus for a type of player like that who's able to handle the team's top lines and handle them so adeptly, dude.
Well, given how many... I think he had 35 points 1 year, didn't he?
Right, but still, he was kind of soft and was... the thing I was used to dislike about how Vlasic plays, I always felt like he was reaching with his stick and not playing with his body.
Right.
And I don't feel like that's the case anymore. He's always had good positioning. He's always been a smart player. But now, everything seems to have come together for him this year.
It's true. And I think of a play he made against Matthew Shane that the announcers definitely pointed out in that game where Matthew Shane is just a wizard. He's a young guy. He's a great skater. He's stopping and starting, curving this way and that. And he's trying to do all these tricks. And Vlasic just, there's nothing there. Vlasic is just with him every step of the way, stopping and starting, always staying between him and the goal, in a position to block shots, in a position to poke the puck away. And Matt Duchene probably would have evaded maybe 80% of the defensemen in the National Hockey League. And Mark Edward Vlasic wasn't even out of position,
right?
Much less juked out of his shorts, as we would have seen, John Scott be.
John Scott.
In that same situation.
Oh, gosh. The Blackhawks version of Semenov.
Yeah.
That guy, you get the puck in his hands, and he throws it like a cinder block just up the middle, praying that someone might get there. What a useless hockey player.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled to see him on the Blackhawks. A very quiet 9 minutes from Jamal Mares tonight. I asked you on the train on the way back. I don't even remember him playing.
I don't even remember seeing him on the ice somehow. Like, what did he do? He did nothing. It was like the quietest stat line, too. He had nothing on his stat line.
So certainly... Brad Winchester's 5 minutes was more eventful than Jamal Mares' nine.
Right.
I mean, maybe it's because we're looking at Winchester because he's on our team, but
I
remember that line being out there. If you had done a blind taste test on me, I would have told you they played more than Mares, and that was not the case. I mean, maybe Mares got some PK time. I didn't see, but dude... what's your take on the Blackhawks after tonight? Now, they're without Seabrook, a pretty important player for them. That means no John Scott and Seabrook in his place. That's a pretty big addition and large subtraction. What do you make of this version of the Blackhawks?
Well, they were very frustrated. It's a frustrating game to watch. I mean, the Sharks, sure, I don't think they played very well. It seemed like the Blackhawks were dominating the game, but not dominating the game in the way that we've seen in the past with Patrick Kane making giant circles in the offensive zone,
yeah,
evading all defensive players and just sort of, you know, creating offensive chances when he feels like it. It was more like the Sharks would try to break out of the zone. The Blackhawks would be covering everybody in the neutral zone. The Sharks would make sort of either not a great pass or they just get pressured into turning it over. The Blackhawks would take possession in the neutral zone, sort of dump it in. You know, maybe they'd have a little okay possession and then the Sharks would get the puck again and the whole thing would sort of repeat. And it seemed like that happened for, you know, I thought the Sharks played really well maybe the first 10 minutes of the first period. And then once Dan Boyle took that first penalty, it seemed like it was all downhill from there. The Sharks sort of never regained their footing. They had a little bit of resurgence after their goal. But otherwise, it just seemed like the Blackhawks were just sort of stymieing them in the neutral zone and just sort of taking away all of their opportunity to get a decent, you know, zone break-in. So, you know, that's going to be not a great matchup for the Sharks, right? I mean, it certainly looked like they didn't really have an answer for that.
They weren't able to get much going. You know, they were completely held up in the neutral zone, which is what we've seen the Blackhawks do, the Sharks, pretty much on rinse and repeat for the last 3 years. I mean, we saw it in the sweep in the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
It was very frustrating to watch, and it seems like McClellan and the staff and the players haven't really figured out how to break out past that. Now, what they have figured out how to do is slow down the Blackhawks. Now, this team I don't think is as good as the team that won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, but the thing the Sharks had tonight was a defenseman to play with Vlasic who was mobile enough to help him shut down that line.
Right.
And Brent Burns, I thought, had a really good game tonight. He's not going to show up on the stat sheet, mm-hmm, but this is why Brent Burns is on this team.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the best defensive defenseman in the league.
Right.
But he doesn't suck.
No.
And he is very mobile back there, and he was able to keep up with the slick skating forwards of Chicago, and that was a big difference maker tonight, at least from where we were sitting.
Yeah, I think so.
Burns being able to ride along with Vlasic was a difference maker, and I think it was good to see Jason Demers finally kind of break through a little bit tonight. Once he scored that goal, which maybe went off Taze, or I'm not sure what happened, but he seemed to get his confidence back. Mm-hmm. I felt like he was playing a little bit more physically, a little bit more confidently, and was making confident decisions with the puck instead of sort of hoping he wasn't going to screw up.
Yeah, it's true. I'm sure he's a little unnerved by the turn of events of the last couple of months. And all of a sudden, at the beginning of the year, it seemed like, you know, he was a regular guy in the lineup every night, and it was going to be Vandermeer and Colin White sort of trading places. And then all of a sudden, it seems like Justin Braun completely supplanted him in that sort of third line offensive defenseman spot. And that would sort of rattle anybody's confidence. And you know, I hope he manages to rebound from this, because we've seen him be a pretty good player here, you know, these past couple of years.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, however many games we're 18 games into the season, he's played, you know, half of them, you know, so that's 7 to 10 bad games. I don't think that sort of sums up the kind of player that Jason Demers is. Did we get an email about Jason Demers?
We did get an email. We've got 3 emails this week to cover.
Okay.
And maybe it's time to jump to this one. I believe that this is the email from...
Is this it?
Yes, this is from Eric.
Okay.
Go ahead, dude.
Okay, it says, as much as I love curry, I really hope this Indian adventure has come to an end.
It has.
And no one calls it curry in India. It's all masala.
Oh.
Yes, which just means basically spice. So that could mean anything. It's sort of like salsa. Like salsa just means sauce, right? In Spanish, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Dude, you took Spanish for like 10 years.
Okay, ask me again.
What does salsa mean?
I don't know.
Okay. Okay, good talk. So back to the email. I'm mostly happy with the composition of the Sharks roster, but like most fans, I'm not convinced this is the roster going into the second half of the season. So 16 games into the season, what roster spots do you guys think are subject to change? My two cents, I've not been impressed with Colin White or Jason Demers. I was expecting our bottom pair to be a strength this season, and while Braun has impressed and progressed, I'm worried about Demers' regression and White's impotence. Maybe it's that time of his career, but I don't think. But don't they have medication for that now?
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. I like this email. Vandermeer, he is who we thought he was, a 70 man. I've liked Winchester and Murray considering the roles they are expected to play, but I've been less than impressed with Desjardins, who I feel needs to be a stud penalty killer despite his willingness to take a hit to make a play. The obvious need prior to the season with a third line winger, but I'm not ready to give up on McGinn, who at least fills the role of the team assassin. So, dudes, who do we need to make some changes to our rich decor to find the right combination? Is a third line winger still a big need, and what about a fourth line center? I know there are teams looking for goalie help, and I cannot imagine Nitti doesn't want to get out of San Jose, and I hear that DW's best friend Jim Rutherford is shopping around.
Ooh.
Sorry for the long email, Eric. Not too long. Not too bad.
Entertaining. If it's entertaining, it'll always make it.
Hey, you're going to make an impotence joke? I'm in. It's just that simple. Yeah, what do you think about this whole, like, Demers and White and this whole sort of third-pairing D problem? Is it a problem?
No, I don't think it's a problem. We're the best team in the NHL right now. I mean, right. What's to fix? Has it been perfect? No, but I don't think it's been bad. Mm-hmm. I kind of like what they're doing. And first of all, I'm not ready to trade Demers at all. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that is something the Sharks should be looking to do unless you can get something of extreme value in return. And I doubt his market value right now is that high.
Right.
But we saw what happened last year with Vancouver and how they were really eight deep on their blue line and they needed to be eight deep. And I don't think it's any shock that the Sharks right now are eight deep on their blue line.
Yeah.
And Doug Wilson has never been shy about copying other teams' formulas that were successful and to go out and get deal Demers for like a pick or some sort of low-level forward that maybe isn't going to make much of a guaranteed impact. I don't think it's going to help, dude.
No, I agree with you. I mean, purely from like an arbitrage standpoint, trading Jason Demers, this is like a buy high, sell low situation. You don't want to sell Demers low right now, and that's where he's at, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think I was going to mention Vancouver. I think that, you know, that seems to be sort of the formula, and it's certainly possible that a guy could go down. I mean, we've talked, you know, maybe we've forgotten Brent Burns has a bit of a concussion history. Certainly Dan Boyle has always been a very steady defenseman and isn't prone to injury, but, you know, he's not as young as he once was.
Dude, knock on something right now.
I am.
Knock on something right now.
I am. So, you know, luckily we don't seem to have a lot of really error-prone defensemen, but as you said, it's you don't want to have too many, and I like the competition aspect. I know I've talked about that in seasons past, where it seems like these guys get kind of comfortable in their certain roles, and there's really no pressure from below for them to actually play well. And right now, in the third pairing, there's a lot of pressure to play
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I don't mind if those guys each play 40 games. I don't care. Like, I mean, you play whoever's hot, whoever's rolling well, and you play the matchups, and you go from there. I think based on tonight, Demers is playing Saturday. I think he's going to play again. I think he played well tonight. I'd say he's already played against Vancouver. He didn't play much in that playoff series last year. If he played at all, mm-hmm. I can't remember. That was sort of that, you know, high ankle sprain mystery injury that was kind of strange that he sat out and they played Ken Huskins and we all cried.
Right.
But I'm not really to pull the trigger there. And in terms of the third line wing, which we've been pretty vocal about that we feel like that's really a missing piece, I'm pretty happy with how Jamie McGinn is playing right now. And to see him out there in the final 2 minutes of the game tonight
mm-hmm.
shows me that he's earned Todd McClellan's trust.
Mm-hmm.
He used to never be out there. Like, he was on death row by that point.
Yeah. <know? laughs> Like, he was showered, shaved.
Yeah. He could have may as well been home.
Yeah.
Like, he never played in the last 10 minutes of games.
Yeah.
And now he's out there in important moments against elite teams. And seeing him fight against Dallas to fight Nystrom, he seems to really understand what he's supposed to be doing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's dangerous offensively if you get him, you know, in a one-on-one speed situation. I mean, he can beat you and he can score. So I think they're giving McGinn every opportunity to be that guy, dude.
Right, which means that in terms of the third line wing, I still think that they could improve in that situation, but it would have to be a perfect situation. They're not going to go out and trade for Chuck Kobosu.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's trade Jason Demers for Chuck Kobosu, and then we can put Chuck Kobosu on the third line. It's like, right. What? Why? Right. You know, that kind of situation. So this isn't going to be a grasping at straws. We have to fill this spot situation, which hopefully puts the Sharks in a bit of a position of strength because, you know, we would wait for exactly the right player to come available. And if that doesn't happen, then the Sharks will be hopefully okay.
Right.
And if exactly the right player comes available in that slot, then maybe they can make a deal. But at least I'd rather them not have to be in that position because every GM in the league is going to recognize that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not every GM. Okay. You know, maybe not Glenn Sather, but okay. Every other GM could recognize it. And, you know, they know they'll have Doug Wilson over a barrel and say, okay, right. You really want Rafi Torres. Well, guess what? You're giving up. You're giving up a lot. So,
right. The Sharks aren't rich with assets. I think we have to remember that. And again, they came in 30th in Hockey Futures prospect pool rankings.
Right.
And, you know, they have some guys who are in the system, players like a Taylor Doherty and Nick Patrecki, a Freddie Hamilton, who are interesting players, and, you know, a Matt Nieto, but he's not signed yet, who are guys that, you know, I doubt the Sharks are really looking to deal unless it's the perfect situation. Now, let's say the Sabres go in the toilet and Paul Gostad is available and you can put him on the third line over Jamie McGinn. You would do it every single day of the week.
Hello.
You know, that's a huge move.
Yeah.
Now, he's unrestricted, I believe, at the end of the year, Matt D'Agostini. I'm not totally positive, but that's the type of player that you move on here. Fourth line, really quickly before we move on.
Yeah.
I'm happy with the fourth line to a degree, but I understand what he's saying, where now we're looking at the penalty kill and we're seeing that those guys, Murray, Desjardins, were given the opportunity to kill those penalties at the beginning of the year and the PK sucked. Mm-hmm. And now we're asking Marlo Pavs, Jumbo to play those minutes. Is that going to end up backfiring on us, dude?
It didn't backfire on us last year too much. I mean, was the problem in the playoffs the fact that those guys played too much?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't think that was the problem.
I don't know. It'd be nice to be able to get a more well-rounded contribution from some of the guys who aren't playing the elite even strength minutes.
Agreed. But given the fact that the PK has just been kind of bad.
It's been better. It was not bad tonight.
Yeah, it's been better. But, you know, you got to go back to what you know works. And I mean, putting Patrick Marleau, one of the you know, the best skaters in the league on the penalty kill, who has a long history of being an effective penalty killer.
Right.
When you're 30th in the league in the penalty kill, I mean, can you really blame the coaching staff for not saying, hey, Andrew Murray, why don't you kill some penalties now that we're 30th?
You don't want to have Patrick Marleau sitting on the bench because you're worried he might get tie-tie. Put him out there.
Yeah.
Right, dude?
Yeah, exactly. And Jumbo's obviously, you know, come a long way in terms of defensive ability.
Sure.
You want him out there. So, yeah, I think it's more of a function of how bad the penalty kill has been rather than how bad those particular players are.
Okay.
That's just my feeling, but maybe the penalty kill was bad because of those guys. I don't know. I wouldn't go.
I don't think they helped, but I'm not sure who was out there for what. We'd have to take a deeper look at that. But we got another question here, dude. I see you scrolling.
We got questions
through the emails, through the blogosphere to see what our other questions are.
Yeah, dude. Do we want to go to... Oh, Adam asks, Joe Pavelski's on pace for 50 goals. Do you think his goal-scoring touch will continue like this, or is this just a hot streak and nothing more? I don't think it's a hot streak. I mean, obviously he is pretty hot, but I mean, the fact that he's, you know, playing with Joe Thornton, I think helps a little. I'm just saying.
I don't think it's going to stop. I don't know if he's going to get to 50.
Yeah.
But I think
40.
He's
definitely
going to get to 40 if he stays healthy.
Yeah.
And he stays with Jumbo. He'll reach 40. And that will be a breakthrough moment for this player. You know, all of a sudden Joe Pavelski goes from being a second line center to an elite all-star level winger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge progression for a guy. This has been gold for the Sharks to make this move. The Heatley trade has allowed this move to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so more than just getting Brent Burns, but moving Pavelski to the top line makes the Heatley trade a win-win. By the way, Heatley on pace for 49 points. So if we're talking about on pace,
there's that. Then.
That's an outstanding year. But the Wild are statistically and in the standings playing very well. I was not impressed when I saw them in person. I thought it was boring.
Yeah.
But I guess that's how they're winning, by being boring. So
right. I mean, Mike Yeo is he made to do with he was very successful on a very young team in the AHL with a lot of rookies and inexperienced players. Clearly he is a guy that installs a system that has to be adhered to, and it seems like that's what Minnesota is doing. Maybe they're not quite doing the 1-3-1
Tampa Bay thing,
but
they're drinking the Kool-Aid, that's for sure. It's working for now, but I just can't see Minnesota keeping this up, dude.
I don't either. No. Dude, let's talk about the Dallas game, because you know, there's that. I mean, that was an talk about it. You know, parts of the first period, especially in tonight's game, were pretty dull. And I think I can say that almost every minute of the Dallas and San Jose game was entertaining in one way or another. And,
right.
You know, needless to say, the Sharks win. They win going away, which is nice. And there's lots of rough stuff and physicality and Ryan Clough getting a fine for slashing Stefan Robida. And there's like a Robida Vlasic thing.
He throws his glove down to the ground and yells like some sort of saucy Frenchman. What is this?
I challenge you.
I fart in your general direction.
Exactly.
His reaction is what made it so hilarious.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, you're the one who like broke Joe Thornton's hand last year.
I know.
So, you know, why don't you pipe down a little bit, sister? You're no angel.
And then there was Chris Barch was in two different fights. And,
right.
You know, so, and then there was a, you know, lots of
fun. Oh, the email we got was about the Steve Ott.
Right.
Dan Boyle confrontation.
He said, my favorite part was Ott getting his jersey pulled over his head and getting stuck for several seconds in that position as Dan Boyle gave him an earful. Do you have any idea what Dan said?
So this is from
Rob and Gilroy. Actually, you know what's funny is if you listen, I listened to this like a bunch of times on the replay and, you know, in Game Center and stuff. And I actually like pulled the clip because
you were able to enhance the sound.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. You could actually like hear what they said. It was really cool.
Okay.
Check it out.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
That's what he said. I heard it.
You did. So, I believe it.
Yeah.
It certainly looks like that's what he said. And a lot more.
Yeah. A lot more.
And Boyle's gloves were off, dude. Yeah. He wanted to fight Steve Ott.
And I wasn't aware that Steve Ott actually had a German accent, but you never know. I mean,
I've never heard him speak.
I never heard him talk either. So, you know, I would expect a little higher pitch than that, but you never know. But, yeah, so that was very entertaining. I know Dallas is coming up again next month, so that's going to be a great game to see. If you don't have tickets to that game and you are free that evening, let's look at the schedule here. It looks like the 8th of December, Thursday night game. I would definitely not miss that one.
Yeah, there'll be some fireworks that night. Looking at how the Pacific Division is shaping up, the Ducks are wretched.
Oh, yes.
The Coyotes are the Coyotes.
Yes.
Dallas is sliding. And yes. I mean, watching the matchup there, they looked like the Dallas Stars, the same team that we saw last year that got a hot start that faded without Brad Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And instead they have Michael Reiter. That's not a great trade-off.
No.
So
they look the same.
Yeah. They're difficult to play. I mean, mm-hmm. they're not a bad team. They're not going to win the Pacific Division.
I don't see that unless something crazy happens.
I just don't see it. I find it also hilarious that they played Andrew Raycroft against us, which is in a way I was mildly insulted and then found it extremely humorous. So
hey, if
that was your welcome back gift, by the way. You got off the plane, Andrew Raycroft was in net, and you giggled.
Yeah, I did. It was great. It was a nice little gift to welcome home. It was like getting a lay in Hawaii when you get off the plane.
On the flip side, dude, the Colorado game, I fully expected us to lose. Mm-hmm. I thought that's a trap. After an emotional win on Saturday night, you go to Colorado, you play a young team, the youngest team in the NHL, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They their blue line is bigger, it's better, and here you go. You know, Jaguar, say what you want about him, he's been playing really well.
That's true.
I thought for sure the Sharks were going to get lit up. I had a feeling it was going to end badly, and the Sharks played really well.
Yeah.
And they got out of that game, and that's a game that in the past I feel like they've laid an egg on.
Right.
Yeah, encouraging stuff, dude.
It very much so. It seems like there's more waves of incoming, you know, this year with the Sharks, you know, both on D and on offense and Havlat and all these things. It's just it seems like it's one of those things where before, you know, a guy would maybe not play very effectively one night and then the whole team would sort of sag. And it seems more like this year, like a guy maybe, you know, has a night off. I can't think of a player specifically against Colorado that didn't play very well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if there was one, then other guys would sort of pick up the pace and find a way to get it done. So, you know, it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's pretty great to see the Sharks, you know, playing as well as they are. And, you know, I think they're number one in the ESPN power rankings or something like that.
Yeah. With Sidney Crosby back in Pittsburgh, I don't know how much longer that's going to last,
right.
But the Sharks definitely right now are playing like a team that has something to prove, mm-hmm. and they're not taking any games off, at least not recently. Even the Phoenix game, I don't feel like they took that game off. They just, that's a system that can shut you down sometimes, and Mike Smith just happened to play really well.
Right. I thought he played amazingly well in that game.
Watching this team this year, the thing that made me crazy about Danny Heatley is I felt like some nights he was just sort of gliding around. And I haven't seen that much from any players this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not on a consistent basis. Not on a nightly basis. You know, we've criticized Patrick Marleau about that in the past. I don't see that from Patrick Marleau this year either.
No.
Now, it's a long season. Maybe they'll go into a funk, and I think we can expect that's going to happen. I mean, we're not going to run the table here.
No.
But I think as important as tonight was, Saturday's just as important, and I would really like to see them rise to the occasion against Vancouver and show them that this team's better and it's not going to end the same way as it did last year.
Right, and we're not just going to let them sort of walk all over us. At least that first line seemed to really sort of have its way.
This year, we plan on losing the Western Conference Finals in 6 games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your face.
Baby steps.
Dude, about the power rankings, we did get a comment on the blog. It says, a lot of big sports sites have the Sharks number 3 in power rankings. Do you think this is fair considering the Sharks have beaten both the Wild and the Penguins? And where do you think the Sharks realistically should be in the power rankings?
The Sharks should be ahead of the Wild for sure. That's ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
that someone would put the Sharks ahead of the Wild just based on their head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, and plus the Wild, they're in like the really crappy division.
Yeah, and they've played more games than the Sharks, so of course they're going to have more points.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb. Anyone who's putting that's ridiculous. If you really think the Wild are a better team than the Sharks, then welcome to Crazy Town. Now, the number one team in a lot of the rankings is who? Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh or the Sharks.
Yeah, you can't fault that.
No.
I mean,
with Sidney Crosby coming back and playing as well as he had, I mean, it's sort of like a lookout situation if you see those guys on the schedule now.
A fully healthy Pittsburgh, they're the Stanley Cup favorites.
They're going to be bombing for the next 2 weeks at least.
They're the favorites. I mean, they've got a proven combination. They've got a great blue line, and they've got two of the best players in the game.
Yeah.
And you know, how can you argue with that? I can't argue with Pittsburgh number one. I'd put the Sharks number two.
Right now.
Yeah. Right now, I put them number two.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, dude, do we have any more emails? I just want to make sure that we've covered everything.
I think we got it, dude.
Dude, I think you're right.
I think this was a great return.
Yes, dude.
Absolutely. Dude, welcome back.
Thank you, dude.
I'm looking forward to many more podcasts this holiday season. What's the plan tomorrow for Thanksgiving?
Going and seeing some family tomorrow, going to eat as much as I can and watch some football. And
can I give you a little tip?
Yeah.
Don't max out with the appetizers. All right. Make sure that you hang in there for the main course. You know, I know you'll be excited when they're bringing around the meat skewers, but there's a turkey coming, dude. So just don't blow it.
Good tip. I'm writing that down.
I'm making a turkey tomorrow.
Dude.
I know. I've done it once before. I did it at Christmas once before and I did well, but
do you have a backup to turkey?
I there's no backup. There's some frozen ravs.
So it's going to be
frozen ravioli.
It's going to be KFC backup.
God, I don't want to be like the Christmas Story family sitting in a Chinese restaurant. No, dude, I'm going to rock that turkey. I'm going to rock it out. It's
nice,
gonna
dude.
Be delicious.
Deep fat fry it?
No, we had that last year, but I'd be afraid to do that.
Sounds cool.
I'd burn my house down. I know that's what would happen. I'm just going traditional.
It'd be very festive, though, if you did that. You know, like a holiday fire.
We're going to say that for
chestnuts roasting.
4th of July.
Okay.
That's a 4th of July day.
Sweet, dude. Well, dude, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. And we will talk to you next week. Peace out.
Go Sharks.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.